Good morning.
Great to have everyone here this morning. If you're visiting with us, it's great to have you in our fellowship this morning. We are busy with a series called T3. It's called the Treasure Principle 3, Unlocking the Secret of Joyful Giving. This series is really all about money. Okay. Now, I know immediately when you start on that topic, people don't like it. Let me just make a couple of things clear. One is we don't believe in the prosperity gospel in terms of that the more you give, the more God's going to give to you. Maybe he sends some your way, but that's not really what we believe. We don't believe that the more you give to the minister, because no one gives to me directly, then the better the church is off. In other words, some people believe that the wealthier the minister, if I drive a Porsche, it means that we are doing very well as a congregation and that the Lord will bless us. We don't believe that. Also, no matter what you give towards contribution, it does not influence my salary. Okay, so I'm teaching on money today because I believe that we need to be very generous. But if someone were to sort of rip out a check this morning and give R1 million, that's not going to influence my salary in any way or capacity or any of the ministry staff or people that work for the church. Our salaries are set by an independent group of people, a salary committee, of which none of them work for the church in any capacity. So I just want to start off with that. I'm not shy to talk about money because I know it doesn't directly influence me and because I believe that I also give towards the poor and I give towards the church. And so therefore I feel since I give, and we all give, and the Bible speaks to us all, we can just speak about this topic. So, just wanted to get that out of the way. If you're visiting, we're not asking you for your money. We're speaking to the congregation. And if you're visiting, and for all of us really, the topic is not necessarily about giving, but our hearts and our attitudes towards money and what it is versus what God intended for it to be. So, last week we started looking at this topic, and we mentioned some interesting things. One of it was that there are twice as many verses in the Bible about money and possessions than what there are about faith and prayer combined. Twice as many verses on possessions and money in the Bible than what there are on prayer and faith combined. Jesus speaks more on the topic of money and possessions than he does on faith and hell. As a matter of fact, 15% of everything that Jesus ever said that is recorded is on the topic of money and possessions. He speaks on that topic, or use it as a reference, more than anything else. And so, we must look at this and somehow figure out, is there something that God wants us to know about money that we don't? Is our spiritual condition somehow connected to our attitude and thinking about money? Last week we looked at what does my giving say about me? In other words, what I give to God, what I give towards the poor, whether I'm generous. What does it say about me? Afterwards I thought that I should actually have given it a different title. I should actually have called it, what does my keeping say about me? Because last week we looked at God doesn't look at what we give. We looked at the poor widow giving everything she had and the wealthy giving a lot, but not just partially of what they had. And he was more impressed with the widow's heart because she gave everything. Now, again, the Bible's not in any way suggesting that we should give everything. But it does say something about our heart. So it's not about what do I give? Do I give 10%? It's not about actual amounts because it's all relevant to what you earn. But more percentages. And it's not about an issue what I give, but what I keep. Does that make sense? I know there's a lot to what I just said. So I hope that somewhere it kind of sinks in there. Today we're going to talk about what does God want us to do with our money? How does he want us to use our money? Now you can turn to 1 Timothy chapter 6. Please do. How does God want us to use our money? Now, let me mention a couple of things here. I think most of us must probably feel that, how many of us feel like we're financially tight currently? Okay, we got a couple of tight ones. Now, what did South Africans spend their money on in 2008? During the 2008 financial year. Now, I only know what companies made, and obviously we gave them that money. There's a company called Famous Brands. Who have you guys ever heard of them? One or two. Okay, Famous Brands actually owns Steers, Debonairs, and Wimpy. How much money did South Africans spend in the 2008 financial year at Steers, Debonairs, and Wimpy? 1.5 billion rand. we that are so tight on money spent 1.5 billion rand at Steers, Debonairs and Wimpy. What about Woolworths? 11 billion. And their 2008 financial year. Multi-choice, DSTV. Cannot live without it. 8.8 billion rand. Now, I would hope and assume that some of that is from advertising. Otherwise, I assume everyone has DSTV. I don't. Unfortunately. Pick and Pay. For those of us that do not go to Woolworths. What did we give them last year out of our poverty? 49 billion rand. And this is Pick and Pay corporate. This does not include the family stores. I'm not talking about what you get here in Valkemoot and Boston. This is, and the shopping centers, like what you get in Canal Walk, a Tiger Valley, N1 City, those alone. It does not include the family stores in your local neighborhood. We, the poor people, gave them 49 billion. What will one do without Vodacom? 55 billion rand. Not an MTN and Cell C, I don't even know what their figures are. On Vodacom alone, South Africans spent last year 55 billion rand. Now, what do these figures tell you? It tells you that we have a lot of money. We think we don't. But the facts say differently. Now, one of the questions that people often ask is it wrong to be rich? Is it wrong to be wealthy? In short, the answer is no. The Bible doesn't command us to be poor. The Bible doesn't say the rich cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. It says how hard it is for the rich to enter the kingdom of heaven. It is certainly not wrong, but let me tell you something. What it is dangerous. It is dangerous to be wealthy. It is dangerous to have a lot of money. If you just look at the scriptures and you see what did materialism do to people, the examples are scattered throughout the scriptures. Think of someone like Achan in Judges chapter 6. Materialism cost him his life, his family's life, and dozens of men and battles' lives. What about Delilah? Did she not sell out Samson to the Philistines for a fee? Because she wanted to have more wealth? She wanted to be richer? Samson, the wisest man that ever lived? Strongest. Just testing you guys. Solomon, the wisest man that ever lived. What did he do? He wanted more and more and more and more. To the point where he was actually disobedient to God. To the point where we don't actually know, scriptures, according to the scriptures, it doesn't even look like Solomon made it to heaven. Where did it start? A lust for money. Judas. Did he not give up his salvation for 30 silver coins? Acts chapter 5. Ananias and Sapphira. Were they not struck down by God, because they lied about money, because they loved money so much? You remember the parable of the sower, where the farmer comes and he sows some seed and some falls on rocky soil, some falls in the path, some falls on thorny soil, and some falls on good soil, and there's lessons to be learned from it. And it says, those seed that fell on the thorny soil, in other words, the word of God is sown, those that fell on this thorny soil, what does it represent, a thorny soil? Those who are deceived by wealth, who so desperately want to be wealthy and run so much after money that it choked it and made it unfruitful. Remember the church in Laodicea in Revelation chapter 3? Jesus told them that they were lukewarm. Well, where did it start? It started with their wealth. They said, listen, we are rich. We are wealthy. We do not need a thing. But then Jesus said to them, you do not realize that you are wretched, pitiful, poor, blind, and naked. You're not able to see it because you're so consumed with your money. You're so consumed with making meeting budget. You're so consumed with having what you want. So to be wealthy or to be rich is not wrong. But if you're not careful, it can certainly be very dangerous. And that's what we need to think about as we spend our money, as we plan our budgets. What do I love? We spoke about it last week. Do I love God or do I love money? Do I want to live in the danger zone or do I want to make sure that I play it safe? Jesus said in Luke chapter 12, because of all these things, watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. Jesus says, watch out. We need to be careful. We're careful of many things. We're careful in the way we drive. We're careful in what we feed our kids. We're careful not walking on a ledge. We're careful not to touch an electric fence. Jesus says, be careful when it comes to money. Be careful in running after it. Be careful in the way that you spend it. So reality is, we have wealth. Reality is, it is not wrong to be wealthy. The question obviously is, what should we do with our wealth? Take a look in 1 Timothy chapter 6. It says there in verse 17, Paul is speaking to Timothy and he says, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain. But to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. And this way they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. Strong words. He says, command those that are rich. It's not suggested, it's not a thought, it's not just share with them. It says, command those that are rich not to put their hope in money, but to put their hope in God. Command those that are rich to be generous and willing to share. Command those that are rich to make sure that they store up for themselves through their generosity, through their willingness, treasure that would run into the next life, that they store up for themselves treasure in heaven. Command those that are rich in this present world. Now, who is he talking to? Is he talking to Bill Gates? When he says, command those who are rich in this present world, is he talking to a Warren Buffett, a Oprah Winfrey, a Toke Sekwale, a Raymond Ackerman? He seems to be doing well with Pick and Pay. The Ruperts, the Oppenheimers, command those that are rich in this present world. Who do we consider to be wealthy? Would it be the top quarter of the world? Would you consider yourself wealthy if you fall in the top 10%, top 5%? How do we know if we are wealthy? Well, statistically, if you have food and you have a set of decent clothing and you have some form of shelter that can protect you from the weather, and you have some means of reliable transportation, meaning a bicycle included, that's reliable, then you would fall in the top 15% of the wealthiest people in the world. If you have a decent set of clothes, you have food to eat, you have shelter that protects you from the elements outside, and you have some means of reliable transport, you statistically fall in the top 15% of the world. If you add to that any amount of savings, I mean, if you can save 10 rand, any amount of savings, and you have a hobby for which you need any form of equipment. You're a fisherman and you have a fishing rod. You own a house and you have two cars in any condition. Any condition. You have moved up to the top 5% of the wealthiest people in the world. 2.6 billion people live without sanitation. 2.6 billion people. That is almost half of the world. 2.7 billion people live on less than 16 rand a day for all their expenses. That was their budget for everything that they own, everything that they need to do. They can afford 2.7 billion people 16 rand a day. 1.1 billion people, that's about a fifth of the world population, lives on 8 rand a day. 8 rand a day. 6 million children die every year before their fifth birthday because of malnutrition. 800 million people go to bed hungry every single night of their lives. Every 3.5 seconds, 1001, 1002, 1003, someone dies because of starvation. Every 3.5 seconds. Command those who are rich in this present age. Who would that be? Is he talking to Bill Gates? Is he talking to Oprah Winfrey? I'm sure he is. Is he talking to us? My guess is that more than half of us fall in the top 15%. If not 90% of us fall in the top 15%, most probably about half of us fall in the top 5% of the world. And he is saying, command those that are rich to not put their hope in wealth, to not put it in their possessions, but to put it on God and to be generous and to be willing to share. And in that way, they will store up treasures for themselves in heaven. It is a command. It is not a suggestion. God is saying, guys, I want people in this room, if you have a set of clothes, if you have a bicycle, if you have some food for today, I want you to store up treasure in heaven. Now, how do we store up treasure in heaven? Well, the question is, what part, or how do you answer, does this store up treasure in heaven? Me spending this money, will the effect of that run into eternity? That's treasure in heaven. So if it gets left behind, if it gets burned, if it makes no effect into eternity, then what I'm spending is I'm spending here. It is not having an effect into eternity. I'm not storing up treasure in heaven. Jesus saying through Paul here that what we need to do is we need to store up for ourselves treasure in heaven. How can we do that? Let's take a look at our budget. What are sort of the top 5, 6, 7 things that we spend our money on? Entertainment, okay. Jason puts number one, entertainment. Okay. Transport. Bond or rent, okay, home. I thought someone said bread. I thought, gee, top of your money, go to bread. Home. Food. Medical. Tax. What kind of electricity are you using to make it in the top six? I'm talking about top six. Top seven. Phone. Okay, one at a time. I can't hear 50 people, at the same time. Let's go through now at the back there. Sorry? School fees, education. Okay, we'll just call it Ed. Okay. So we're looking at possibly entertainment, car, home, food, medical, education. I was hoping that someone would shout. And then I was hoping that someone else would shout. Not the minister, the poor. Oh yes, the minister. No, this minister is not poor. Okay. So, how do I build up treasure in heaven? Whatever lost from this life into the next, I'm building up treasure in heaven. If I'm spending money that is making a difference into the future, into eternity, then I'm storing up treasure in heaven. If it does not build into the future, then I'm not storing up treasure in heaven. Does that make sense? So let's talk about these things. Entertainment. When I entertain myself, does that store up treasure in heaven? Okay. So, not entertainment. Maybe we can give entertainment a fifth, if you may be inviting your neighbor over for dinner because you want to reach out to them and help them know God. What does it say in the book of Luke that we need to use our worldly wealth to make friends so we can win them over? Okay, so maybe we'll give a fifth to that. My car. Does my car store up, me owning a car, does it store up for me treasure in heaven? Okay, it seems like, okay, do you think Jesus cares about what car you drive? Okay. My home, where I physically live in, does that store up treasure in heaven? Again, to simplify, do you think Jesus cares what home I live in? I'm sure He wants me to be sheltered, so we'll say a part of it, but in general, no, maybe a seventh. Okay, food. Does that store up treasure in heaven? Okay, that is a brother from Johannesburg. For those of you visiting, he is not part of the local church. No, he's family. Okay, does it store up treasure in heaven? Obviously keeps me alive. So again, we're talking about partly, but not necessary. Pick and Pace, $49 billion, and Woolworths, $11 billion. Okay, medical. Does that store up treasure in heaven? The lack of there will get you there quicker. Okay. Obviously, again, one can say partly because, let's call it that, partly, because obviously if I'm healthy, I can do God's work. If I'm healthy, I can reach out to people. If I'm healthy, I can feed the poor. If I'm healthy, I can make a difference. So I can somehow play towards eternity. So we'll say sort of a partly. Okay, education. What kind of education? Did you know that 580 million women in the world are illiterate, completely cannot read or write? 1.1 billion kids in the world do not go to primary school. They have no primary education. 1.1 billion kids. Education obviously plays some role, but again the question is to what level? How badly do I need to be educated? We need doctors, we need engineers, we need roads to drive on, we need to be able to survive. So again, we would say a partly. Okay. Giving to God's work, does that make a difference into eternity? Giving towards the poor, does that make a difference into eternity? That's an absolutely yes. In Matthew chapter 25, I think it is, Jesus talks about the end of time, and He says, listen, you guys are not making it. And they say, why not? He says, I was naked and you didn't clothe me. I was hungry and you didn't feed me. And they said, but when were you naked and when were you not hungry? Did we not do this? And He said, whenever you didn't do it for the least of these, you didn't do it for me. So certainly it seems like it plays a role into eternity. So the question again is, as I look at my budget and at my life and at my expenses, I need to ask, what kind of investment am I making into eternity? Something interesting that I did recently is I took my budget and I put it on an Excel spreadsheet. and I connected the percentages of everything that I spend to my salary. In other words, I wanted to know, what part of my salary do I spend on entertainment? What part of my salary do I spend on my car? What part of my salary do I spend on my home? What part of my salary do I spend on food? What part of my salary goes to medical, to education? What part of my salary goes towards God's work? And what part of my salary goes towards the poor? Do you know what a frightening experience that is? That as I looked at this, about plus minus 80% of my income did not go into eternal things. And I have to ask myself, is that wise? If Jesus is saying through Paul in the Bible, command those who are rich, he's talking to me specifically, and I think to a number of us in this room, saying, command those who are rich in this present age to not put their hope in wealth, to not put it in how they can entertain themselves, what kind of car they drive, what home they live in, what it is that they eat, their miracle, their education, to not be focused on those things, to put their hope in God, and be generous and willing to share, and in that way, store up treasure in heaven. See, that is the treasure principle. The treasure principle is storing up for the future and not for now. One that we left out here. Who wants to guess what it is? One of our top expenses. Starts with a D. Debt. Debt is a killer. How do we end up in debt? Living a champagne lifestyle on a beer budget. Okay, not making, wanting to make peace with the fact that we are not able to live the current lifestyle that we want, so we borrow money to be able to live it. Instead of scaling down in our lifestyle, we say, somehow I can afford this, somehow I can do this, and so I actually get into debt. And I need to again look at what percentage of my income am I actually giving towards bad decisions that I make in living that champagne lifestyle on a beer budget. When you get the treasure principle, then everything in your life changes. Because when you get this and you realize, listen here, how does God want me to use my money? He is saying, what I want you to do is I want you to invest into the future. Then it changes the way that you do everything. Let's say, for instance, you buy a home. Now, this is big stuff that I'm talking about here. Radical things. I'm talking about when you, if you become a Christian, you need to change your whole perception about money. Let's say I buy a home and I can afford a 2 million rand house. Now, some say, sure, that is semi-sure. It's dependent on who you are. Years ago, it was a very big sure. Now, it's a semi-sure. Okay? Let's say I can afford to buy a 2 million rand house. But now I decide that I know that my 2 million rand house is not going to build treasure for me in heaven. So I make the decision and say, you know what? Nowhere in the Bible does it say I should live in poverty. Nowhere does it say I have to be poor. So I just make a decision. I'm going to make a compromise. I'm not going to buy a 2 million rand house. I'm going to buy a 1.5 million rand house. Is it really that huge of a difference? Now, what we tend to do, obviously, is we try and max ourselves out. So notice, we need to buy a home, and no matter what you qualify for, you just think you just can't make it. I mean, if you can qualify for a million rand bond, you want a 1.1 million rand house. But the guy who qualifies for 1.1 million rand bond wants a 1.2 million rand house. Do you guys understand what I'm saying? We want more. So I qualify for, I can get a 2 million rand bond, but now I say because of the treasure principle, because of what God says that He commands those that are rich in this present age, you need to build into the future, I'm buying a 1.5 million rand house. I'm not only saving. The question is, what do I do with the difference? Why can't I now give that to what is eternal? Why can't I say, well, I'm going to still take the 2 million rand bond, or I'm going to take the 1.5 million rand bond, but the difference in the payment, I'm actually going to give towards God's work. I'm actually going to give it towards the poor. I'm not just going to go for this tithing thing that we'll speak about next week, because I want to make sure that I store up treasure in heaven. And I know as we sit here, a number of us are thinking of people that we think should hear this, and we're thinking, I know there's about maybe 10 people that can afford a 2 million rand house. He's talking to them. Okay, I'm not talking to them. We'll go back to your home. Let's say you can afford a million-rand home. Why can't I make the decision to say, I'm going to stay in an 800,000-rand house? Take 200,000-rand, or at least the bond payment thereof, and say, why don't I give that to God? Well, if I can pay 20 years in a house, why can't I pay 20 years for what is eternal? What about a car? I can afford a car of 250,000 rand. Nothing wrong with driving a good car. I make a decision and say, I'm rather going to go for an 80,000 rand car. I'm going to take that 70,000 rand or the payment thereof. In other words, I'm not borrowing the money. The one car would have cost me maybe 6,000 rand. The other one's costing me 4. I'm taking the 4 and I'm taking the extra 2,000 rand. And I say, I'm going to give it to the poor fund. Not this month, every month. Because if I can afford this money and if I can feel good about myself paying that money to drive this car, why can't I feel good about myself paying that money for the poor? Why can't I feel good about myself paying that money and give it to the church that changes people's spiritual lives? Why can't I do that? I can't do it if I'm sucked in by money. Now again, is it wrong to have a 250,000 rand car? No. But I hope then I can afford a 350,000 rand car and I gave the difference. This works like that with everything. I went to the pharmacy this week to buy multivitamins. And somehow by accident, last month, I drink a volume multivitamin every day. It's good for you. So I can be healthy. By somehow, by accident, last month, I bought the chewable ones. You get swallow ones and you get chewable ones. I don't know if you've had the chewable one, but the one that I use, it's chewable. I don't know why they made it chewable. The thing is too big to swallow. I try to swallow it because it's so disgusting when you chew it. But it's a monster pill, so I can't get it down. So I chewed it. So this month, I went back to the pharmacy, and this time I said to them specifically, listen here, I want to make sure that I don't get the chewable one again. I want the swallow one. Now, listen to this. The chewable one for 30 or 90 pills, whatever is in the thing, was 99 rand. Guess what the swallow was? 160. 160 rand. Swallow the thing. I said, are you sure? I looked at those two price tags and I thought about my experiences last month with chewing those horrible pills. I thought about the treasure principle. I said to myself, chow down. But take the 60 rand that I've saved and not keep it to myself, but rather add that. See, when you get the treasure principle, what you start doing is you start actually looking for savings in your budget. You start actually looking for savings and you start saying, listen here, what I can do is my entertainment is this amount, but I can actually cut out 20% of it. My food bill is actually this amount. People live on 8 rand a day. I don't have to, but I'm sure I can cut out 20% of it. And as I cut out these different things, then suddenly my eternal bill is changing. Suddenly, I'm building more treasure in heaven. Suddenly, I'm enabling people to become Christians. Suddenly, I'm enabling people to have food that didn't. Enabling people to be educated that couldn't be because I'm deciding to be more generous, because I'm deciding actually simply to listen to the words of Jesus. It's building treasure in heaven. Now, if it's so simple, why don't we do it? Why do we spend our money wrongly? I think, first of all, it's because we think it's our money. We think that our money is ours. We think that our possessions are ours. I think my salary, my house, my car, everything that I do is mine. Even the title of this message is called, How Does God Want Us to Use Our Money? No one jumped up and said, that is theologically wrong. No one said, listen, it is not our money. Now, if I said today, listen here, today we're going to talk about five reasons why we should pray to Mother Mary and not Jesus, I think we would have had a different response. But yet we think it's our money. The Bible doesn't say so. In Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 14, it says, to the Lord your God belongs the heavens, will come up on the screen, even the highest heavens, the earth, and everything in it. To the Lord your God belongs the heavens, even the highest heavens, the earth, and everything in it. Leviticus 25:23. God says, the land is mine, and you are but aliens, and my, listen to this, tenants. So it's whether you're renting a house or paying a bond, you're a tenant. God says, and I'm not saying it's wrong to have a bond, and I don't think the Bible says so, saying it's his house. We're tenants. Haggai 2:8. The silver is mine and the gold is mine, declares the Lord Almighty. Job 41. Who has a claim against me that I must pay? Everything under heaven belongs to me. Psalm 24. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. For he founded upon the seas and established it upon the waters. He says, I made this thing. Psalm 50. Every animal of the forest is mine, and the cattle on 1,000 hills. I know every bird in the mountain, and the creatures of the field are mine. If I were hungry, I would not tell you, for the world is mine, and all that is in it. It is not our money. There is no verse in the Bible that suggests that God somehow gave up ownership. That he died and said, my money is now your money. We might think, but I own myself. 1 Corinthians 6 says differently, you're not your own. You're bought at a price. It's not our money to begin with. We are merely money managers. Every month I pay an insurance amount to my broker who takes a 3% management fee to be able to manage my insurance for my car and my home. Who of us do that? Do any of us have insurance on our houses and cars? Let me just see a show of hands here. Okay, about 50, 60% of us. How would you feel if the broker used all of it? How would you feel if the broker actually gave 3% towards the insurance and you insured for 50 Rand and he kept the rest for himself? We are money managers. We're not owners, and that's why I think we don't get the treasure principle. Another reason, we think earth is our home. Hebrews 11:13 says that as Christians we are aliens, strangers, and pilgrims on this earth. It is not our home. Philippians 3:20 says that our citizenship is in heaven. 1 Peter, live your lives as strangers, here in reverent fear. The book of Corinthians talks about our bodies being a tent. It is just a dwelling place. Our eternal home is in heaven. The more we own on earth, the more we have, the more restricted we are. Pilgrims are unattached. They are travelers, not settlers. Pilgrims merely use possessions to facilitate their mission. In other words, if you were to travel throughout Africa, and you decide to do so hitching, at some point, you might jump on a train, you might rent a car, you might have a bicycle, but the bicycle only serves its purpose as far as it gets you. You're not attached to it. You don't want to climb a mountain with that thing on your back. It is merely there to facilitate your mission. See, when we understand treasure in heaven, we realize that my car, my home, my entertainment, all these things are merely there to facilitate my mission. My mission is eternal. Hebrews 12 says, let us throw off everything that hinders and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us throw off everything that hinders. No one can run with a TV on their back or a stereo, maybe an iPod, not a couch. We can't run with these things. It says, let us throw off everything that hinders. Again, am I saying that we should live in total poverty? Nowhere in the Bible does it even suggest it. But it does say travel light. I love Cape Town. I love the home that I live in. There's nothing, if I do a trip, we've just recently been to Malawi to visit the church there, or even if we go on holiday and we come back, do you know what I say 90% of the time when I walk in the front door? There's no place like home. I love my own bed. I love my own house. I love to be there where everything, where I just know how it all works. The problem is we actually forget where our real home is. At death, the disciple doesn't leave home. At death, the disciple goes home. And the longing for home should not be in my local home year, and it shouldn't be in my car year. The longing for home should be when I can actually die and be with God. And when I die, that I can then say, finally, I've finished the race. I've kept the faith. And I have built, while I had the chance, treasure in heaven. What does this mean for us? What do I want to leave us with? What I want to ask each one of us is to rethink your financial life. To actually go home, take a look at your budget, put percentages to it, figure out what goes where, and figure out how much treasure are you storing up in heaven, because ultimately that's the thing that matters. Let's close out in a word of prayer.